Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for August 26th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and joining me, hopefully in a calmer and more pleasant mood than last week, is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Hey, man. First of all, watch it with the tranquilizer darts. Those things hurt. But I'm mellow about it, if you know what I mean.
I was aiming for the butt, so if I got somewhere else, sorry.
Aim for my butt, you can't miss it. I don't care if you got the worst control in the world.
Well, you lost so much weight recently, it's hard to hit that thing.
Oh, well, I try to keep moving. I know I got to around here. If we've been going at it, I'm a danger to get tranquilized.
Well, I have, you know, I got hammered a little bit on the Facebook page, a little bit in Twitter, so everybody seems to agree with you, so that was that, but I'll enjoy taking my vote into the booth when I go in, so.
You get a vote? That'll be nice. I'm sure I won't get a vote this year.
Wow, that's odd. That's really odd.
Well, that's
really
because I work for the people who decide everything and know everything.
It's a numbers game.
Mm.
And speaking of numbers games, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Coco Ballantyne. I want to add another name to him, like Boom Boom, or I called him Blasting Team the other day.
Yeah, that fits.
We got an interview with Coco Ballantyne and the Yakult Swallows. We're going to talk about Mr. Golden Arm Ma-kun. We're going to talk about Ichiro's achievement and answer some fantastic listener questions. The bases are juice, so let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right. Well, I had the great pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking with Vladimir Ballantyne, and caught up with him a couple times in the past week. When you hear the interview, we're referring to our conversation before the interview, because I was sort of running down the questions and he was just answering them.
Yeah. And then wait a second.
And then when
we start,
the problem was we were moving from the field at Jingu to the Swallows clubhouse, and that process is a very noisy one.
Right.
When you cross the little road there, which is full of fans. And then there's lots of noise going on, and so we got in the clubhouse, inside the doors of the clubhouse, and it's a little quieter there. So anyway, he was going, as I told you before, well, tell us again now.
Yeah, tell us now. The machine's on.
And a couple of the questions were actually quite a little bit more in detail than the second time around. He wasn't in a mood to. He's doing his little Ichiro. I answered that question. Don't ask again.
Right. Well,
so anyway, Coco had, I'll just leave it at this, is that about an hour and a half after we talked, he hit a couple of home runs against the Yomiuri Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hit a couple more the next day. And then he hit another one the day after that. So I'll have a little comment about streaks and such. But hopefully he'll keep hitting them, so people will stop blaming us for stuff that ain't our fault.
Yeah, all right.
So let's hear it, Coco. Our guest on the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast is Vladimir Coco Ballantyne of the Yakult Swallows. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay, well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and you're having such a great season that it seems hard to imagine. You know, the team's not doing so well, but you seem to be very consistent this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the main thing of my success so far. Just stay focused, concentrate, and take every AB as my last one.
Okay.
I try to help the team in anything I can, but you know, it's those kind of years, you know.
Okay.
It's a year where you have a player doing great, but the team not.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we still not out of it, so we still have a couple more run to make, and hopefully we can get the third spot.
Okay, now, how important is winning a home run title to you? You've won two, and how important is that third home run title in 3 years?
Well, you know, it will be personal record. It's something very big for myself, you know, coming to Japan to a way different baseball style, and be able to win in my first 2 years, and I might have a shot to make it 3-4-3 to start my career in Japan. It's something amazing, something that every player love to be part of it.
I hear that.
So, of course, this year you've got another extra one, which is the home run record, because of the hot start you have, and you know the ball being a little fairer this year. You know, you're still on a pace where it's a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even I lost 2 weeks, I lost 14 games. I've been on a hot streak this year. The ball is better. It's better this year. I'm at the point right now where everybody thinking that I might have a shot to break the record. I mean, I don't try to do it. Right. I don't even think about it. But I mean, it would be happy for me to even be tied with the record. I mean, even if I don't break it, I'll be able to tie it. For me, it's something very special because to get my name in that book with those three great player ever that play here, home run hitter, and to get my name in there, it's something special.
Now, your team isn't out of it yet, but let's say here, if the Swallows are getting beat really bad and it's the ninth inning, do you sometimes think, well, if this isn't a bad, I can just try to hit a home run?
Or
is that a bad example you don't want to set for the kids?
No, I mean, that's thinking like that, I think it will be a little selfish, you know?
Right.
I never go up there try to hit a home run. I mean, I just try to up there try to hit the ball hard somewhere.
Right.
And I mean, I don't have to lie to you. Sometimes it feel like, hey, I want to hit a homer, you know. And you take one, two hack, try to hit it out. But at the same, maybe you just, you know, you take your hack, you weren't able to hit it. You just go back and take your AB as a team player.
Does your approach change a lot with two strikes?
Yes, because with two strikes, I mean, I'm a power hitter, but I think I can be an average hitter too. So for me to put those two combinations together, I need to strike out less. And I think when I have two strikes, all I do is try to put the ball in play and try to, you know, find hope.
Okay. Now, we're asking about how the pitchers have pitched you differently. How has that changed? Has it been a case of fewer good pitches to hit as the season is going on? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they try to pitch around you. They try to throw a lot of pitches that they want you to swing at it, not the pitcher you want to swing at. And I think being patient, what I've been doing this year so far, make me able to don't swing on those pitches, don't chase them. And then, I mean, they don't have other choice to throw a strike.
Right.
And I think I will be ready, prepared for the strike, and most of the time, I try to not miss my pitch.
Okay, so you think you're perhaps more disciplined as a hitter this year because of this experience?
Of course. I mean, it's my third year, and, you know, as you guys can see, my strikeouts getting lower every year, and that's my goal. Okay. You know, I want to be a power hitter, but I want to be an average hitter too. So,
okay. Now, I think one thing that a lot of our listeners want to know is where did the nickname Coco come from?
Yeah, I mean, like you was talking about earlier, it's my cousin. She gave it to me when I was little, playing around. I was the only boy in the house.
Oh, okay.
They all my cousin was girls, so I was the only one. So, they try you know, mess around with me and tell me I have a coconut head and talk, and you know, and that's where the name come from.
And you like it now?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I mean, it's go with my last name. You go Coco Ballantyne. It look good.
Okay.
And I think it's easy for all the fans, everybody, to say it, that my first name, because sometimes my first name is a little difficult for people to pronounce. So
sure.
I think I'm happy for them to give it to me.
Nice. Sounds like it could be Japanese, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, since you've been with the team, the Swallows have always been among the top teams in the Central League. This year, it's been a bit of a struggle. How's the team responding to that?
I mean, you know, it's disappointed so far, you know, frustration, because we have a lot of injuries. A lot of the guys that can help us is not here no more. And, you know, we try to do what we can do. We have a lot of young guys coming, step in. They try to do their best.
Mm-hmm. Some of them done real well.
Yeah, they're doing well. I mean, we just don't have the break, you know. It's all about you need a break.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so far we haven't that break yet, you know. And I think we're still not out of it. And I think if we catch that break, we'll be able to at least push at the third place and still be in the playoff.
Okay, so that's the focus now, get back in the playoffs.
Yeah.
3 years in a row, baby.
That's all we try. I mean, you got to, it doesn't matter how you get in. I mean, you just be in and have a chance to go to Japan Series.
All right. Okay, well, good luck with that.
I appreciate it, man.
And good luck with the home run chase.
I appreciate it, bro. Right, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Ballantyne. Now, that didn't hurt a bit, obviously, because you're out there swinging and hitting right. pitches, putting some pitches in the seats that don't belong in the seats.
Ooh, hot cocoa.
Indeed.
Hot, what did I write on Twitter? Hot steaming cocoa, man. He was awesome down there.
Wow. The lime and the coconut, baby. So, now what did you get out of that, of what Coco had to say?
Well, several things, but I guess we should address this quickly. I read a comment a long time ago, and then it came up again recently. So somewhere someone wrote there was a jinx, a JBW jinx, and that they wanted us to talk to some Giants quickly so that we could get them jinxed and get them in a bad way.
Well, how do they feel about that now?
Well, actually, Scott Matheson did well, but the team started losing a little bit, actually, if you think about it. But I don't know what this supposed jinx is, because, like you said, you talked to Coco, I think it was Wednesday.
Yep.
And he's been bashing home runs ever since. So someone said, well, maybe it kicks in after the show gets posted.
Okay.
So we'll have to keep a lookout after Monday.
So between the time I spoke to him and we recorded the show, he hit 6 home runs in 5 games.
So we'll have to see what he does.
6 home runs in 5 games.
Yeah, we'll have to see what he does afterward. But several things stuck out for me in the talk. And I guess, first of all, it seems like the Giants just don't back down from any kind of slugger, and they're going to make their pitches, and they're going to try to make their pitches, and they tried with him, and he says he doesn't think about the record, but I got to say balderdash to that, because I think it's in the back of his mind. I think constantly he's thinking about it. And you take a look at how violently he swings the bat, and one of the guys who has hit 55 home runs in Japan is Alex Cabrera, and we know how violent the swings, the impact, or I guess the damage that the violent swing did to his body, because he ended up with a bad back.
Well, he always had a bad back, and then he, of course, added a broken arm when he got hit by a pitch, and things went downhill from there.
Right. But you look at Coco's swing, and he's not so much violent through the hips. He's more upper body violent. But, you know, a lot of the things I've been looking at is that he's been hitting a lot of pitches that are up in the zone. He hasn't really hit anything really down low in the zone and all that stuff. But I still think he's looking to break this record. I think.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, for him to say that he's not really thinking about it and he's focusing on each at bat. And I believe him, because he's focusing on the pitches. You have to focus to make contact. So that's. But he's looking to do damage. Those swings are not. Those are not. Let's try to get the ball through the middle.
Well, it depends
the box
on
swings.
The situation.
And it depends on the situation. And the I mean, one of the pitches he hit that night was a curveball down and away, and he saw out front.
That night, which night
down.
Are we talking about?
The
first night?
The night that Wednesday. You interviewed on Wednesday.
The first pitch was about probably at shoulder height.
Yeah, he hit a fastball up, but this curveball was hanging, but it was outside, and he pulls it down the line and somehow keeps it fair, and he's hit it on the sweet spot of on the sweet part of the bat, so it went out. So, yeah, of course the home runs help the team, and you can't be selfish and all those other things that he said at the end of the interview, but I gotta believe that he's concentrating on driving the ball every time, and
well,
yeah, we talk about
says.
The park.
He's
yeah,
he's trying to hit the ball hard.
Yeah, we talk about
figured,
the park.
Figured that, the home runs are going to come if he actually hits the ball hard.
Well, yeah, he's going to. Yeah, the ball's just going to go out. I mean, that home run on the curveball is proof of it, because he didn't really hit it that hard. He didn't take one of those violent swings. He was trying to slow his bat down because he wasn't anticipating an off-speed pitch, and he was trying to slow everything down. But he just hit it on the sweet part. But yeah, he all but said at the end of the interview that, you know, hey, look, I'll take my hacks in those situations where the game is maybe out of hand one way or the other. And, you know, if you take a couple.
Well, he was saying no strikes, one strike. Until he gets to 2 strikes, he's up there hacking.
Right. Yeah. He takes one.
2 strikes. He's a patient hitter.
Yeah.
But he's done well. You know, I do think he's gotten better and better. I haven't looked at the numbers. He said I knew that stuff, but that's just overly generous of his. That's overly generous of him. I don't really notice everybody's stats all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe he's gotten more patient. I mean, he's getting, you know, when he gets hot and he sees people not throwing anywhere near the zone, you know, then he's just looking for a pitch that's close enough.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not, you know, I'm not going to drive this if it doesn't look like it might being close to the strike zone.
Yeah.
So he is getting more disciplined.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Like I said, I've seen him hit a lot of pitches up in the zone. I think most of the home runs that I've been seeing July and August have been pitches up in the zone. He hasn't really taken anything.
Well, on Thursday, the second one he hit was pretty far, but was well below his knees. He went down and he blasted that one. Of course, it was inside, which is a fat pitch. But, he just dropped barrel on that thing and it sailed.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to sneak anything past him at this point.
It was like, well, it was low, but, you know, it was a fastball, so come to Papa.
So, yeah, I like the fact, you know, that they're staying focused. He also talked about the fact that they're not out of it. They're not out of the race. They're still trying to get to third place, which I appreciate because every player I've ever talked to has always said, even before this playoff system was devised and implemented, we always have a chance that we can just get on a hot streak. We can come back. We can make a difference. We can make an impact. That's, you know, whatever motivates you, that's fine. I don't believe it. I don't think it's true. I don't think this team is getting far out of last place, if it gets out of last place. But they still have the potential, they still have the opportunities because there are games left.
Well, here's the thing, is they do have games left, and I agree with you in that respect. And it's very important for him to be the player, you know, not the player he is, but the player he, you know, it seems it's important for him to be the player he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a player who is unselfish. And right now, it's very important for the Swallows that he is perceived as being unselfish, because when everybody's hurt and that, you know, the team's just racked with injuries, what does it do when if there's a perception that the guy who really needs to carry the team is playing for his numbers?
Mm.
You know what that means? Season's over.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, he has a big heart in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
That he's very cautious of that perception, and I think it's the player he wants to be. But it's human nature when you can hit home runs and you can land pitches as well as he can, that you're going to see a lot of pitches that you think you can really drive, and you know you can just put a real dent in the ball,
right?
And you're going to do it because that's what you do. You know, that's what he does best, and it would be silly, you know, he's not going to bunt. I've seen, I was at a game a week and a half ago where the Swallows were, I don't remember the game situation, but they could have used a guy on base, and the third baseman was playing about 30 feet behind the bag at third base.
Right.
He could have bunted. He could have easily bunted and loaded. It was, I believe, runners on first and second. He could have bunted and loaded the bases, but he didn't. I think he actually ended up with a single in that, but he was 0-for-1 for 3 or something. But, you know, you've got to do what you're good at some degree. It's good to do things that you're not good at sometimes just to keep people off balances, but anyway, so that was the big thing. Are the Swallows out of it? Not really. They could, and as he said, you know, we haven't had breaks. No, they've had breaks in the turn. They've had broken
the
legs
breaks,
and
yeah.
Broken wrists and broken tendons and ligaments.
They have the kind of breaks that need casts. But
no.
I agree.
That could happen. So who knows?
They're not that far out of a playoff spot. It's very conceivable. And we've talked about this all season. None of the teams after second place can really differentiate themselves from each other except for, you know, whose bullpen is worse,
right,
or whose rotation is worse.
So my take on, I think now it's time to talk about the supposed curse. And my, of course, I don't believe in curses.
Me either.
So basically, when you see people get hot or when you see people get cold, it's every at bat, every result is a combination of a large number of factors,
mm-hmm.
which each in its own is not random. You know, the weather, the park, the pitcher, the quality of his stuff, the pitch sequence, who's catching, the game situation, the batter's health, the batter's mental makeup at that instant, his approach,
their mindset,
his strength,
preparation.
Right. There's so many factors that go into it. And basically, it's normal that people have ups and downs. They get events happen in clumps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you put your, I'll use it. This is an example. made by somebody else, and I wish I could credit to him. He wrote Freakonomics. He said, you know, you put your iPhone, in those days it was still an iPod, you put your iPod on random,
shuffle.
And it's still random if you get three Steely Dan songs in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you don't, you despise Steely Dan and you don't have it in your iPod. Now that's what I call freaky stuff.
Yeah.
That's freaky stuff.
I've got Steely Dan.
But essentially, things do happen in clumps, and they happen in clumps for the fact that there's all these random factors, and sometimes they're stacked for you and sometimes they're stacked against you. When you see Vladimir Valentin hitting, five home runs in 6 days, or six home runs in 5 days, what you're seeing is an extremely good situation in which to hit home runs, coupled with the fact of a guy who is capable of hitting home runs. And when you see when he's not hitting them, you see the thing stacked against him, and maybe he's pressing too hard, and you know he's working against himself. So it's not a case of batters being streaky or this or that as much as perhaps some guys are a little more up and down than others, but I think most pro players have to be pretty consistent to even reach this level. So
right.
it's just the way things go. It looks random and it looks streaky and clumpy, but it's all these little things. They're like ocean waves. They're going to pile up and they're going to shrink.
And I agree with that. But the thing is I haven't seen any proof that
right.
there is a jinx. So if somebody has that data and they can show us, please post it somewhere and post a link.
Paul Tuffy, he knows about my jinx. Apparently, I'm
completely different jinx from
the only one who jinxed Tuffy.
Oh, okay. Well, that's completely different from
others.
JBW. Yeah, this is completely different from the podcast. This is years ago before I even knew you, I think. So.
Well, no, it was afterwards. It was 2001, but there are lots of jinx. I've heard that you've jinxed games by going down before the final out of the ninth inning, and then the game got tied and went into extra innings. I was told that you were the cause of that because you jinxed it. By going down and doing your job, you jinxed the outcome so the game did not end at a proper time for all the rest of the journalists.
And players, perhaps. But maybe, perhaps. All right. All right. Well, if anybody can provide that data or proof, I'd be happy to see it. And then what we should do then is
give us the data and we'll decide whether it's proof. We'll discuss whether it's proof or not.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. All right. Yeah, just post a link somewhere and we'll check it out. All right. We want to move along. So let's talk about Ma Kun and his streak now.
Yep.
The streak lives and the streak ends. The streak that ended was the Eagles' 5-game losing streak
right.
Friday, and
Book ended by a pair of wins by Masahiro Tanaka.
Yeah, Masahiro Tanaka. He goes 7 scoreless innings. The Eagles rally. Seems like that's what they've been doing a lot. In fact, in this whole weekend series, they had to rally to win the last 2 games. And somehow, the Eagles end up sweeping this series from the Chiba Lotte Marines over the weekend after falling behind 4-0 twice. Once on Saturday, once on Sunday, they still.
And then the great pitching duel through most of Friday, through much of Friday's game, 0-0.
With
Yuji Nishino. Well, that was a beaut. That was a heck of a game.
It was a great game, and I, you know, again, of course, I saw somewhere in the paper, and I think I posted it on Facebook. They said, we're waiting for him. We're going to get Malkun. And, you know, the looks on these guys' faces after they've lost, I saw it with the Lions, and I mentioned it in the blog that I posted, and I saw it again with the Marines. They're just kind of looking at the end of the game, trying to figure out how come we didn't score any runs, and how come we can't beat this guy, and Malkun was shaky early in the game, and loaded the bases in the first inning, and he throws this forkball to Salvador, who just looked like a piece of candy.
Yeah, it was I don't know, about belly button high. He's like going, he's not supposed to throw that.
Well, I heard somebody talking about it the other day. He said, hey, you know, sometimes you throw a guy a pitch on one half of the plate, and you're pounding either the outside half or the inside half, and they're fouling them off and stuff, and then you throw them one right down the middle, and they don't know what to do with it sometimes. And I think that's the last
the
last place he expected a pitch to come floating in, and he didn't know what to do. And by the time he realized it was a strike, the umpire was singing and dancing behind the plate. So
was Sasaki then.
So his streak is now, Masahiro Tanaka's streak is now 18 from the start of the season. It is 22 dating back to last season, consecutive decisions.
Both of which are records.
Japan records. And it's so funny how he, obviously Max Scherzer in the United States with the Detroit Tigers is 19-1. He lost the game fairly early on in his streak, but then he restarted his streak. So
Would he go 9-0 or 12-0?
I think it was 11, but I'm not sure. I think it was 11.
Split the difference.
Okay, and but if Makun loses the game, maybe they'll have identical records, you think? That'd be really interesting. Say they go 21-1. They both go 21-1 or something like that. It'd be interesting. But you think he's going to lose this season? I heard some guys talking on TV. They're like, well, if he loses, he's only going to lose one game.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, you know, you've talked about it, and I'm going to go back to my hypothesis about streaks and slumps. Essentially, you've talked about one condition, one factor, which is he hasn't faced a lot of sterling opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Nishino's pretty good.
He's pretty good. Again, you know, not an ace and not a guy you would expect to throw a shutout.
But again, some of the guys who have pitched have really risen to the occasion against him is a thing. So yeah, the quality of the pitching hasn't been that bad, but it hasn't been the best on a lot of days, and the fact remains that if you're going to have a streak like that, you can't get shut out. You can't. Now, he might have gotten shut out once. He might have had a game in which it was 0-0 when he left the game, but that's not the case.
I don't have my, you know, I like scraps of paper.
I do not remember seeing that. I do remember that the next pitcher who came in was never losing. One game it was tied.
Right.
And so that's one game out of 27 now. Hold on, 6 and 22 is 28 games. Yeah. 28 consecutive quality starts from Masahiro Tanaka. Now, they have scored for that team, they've scored a lot of runs for him, more than they have for other guys. And they've shown an inordinate ability to rally when his streak's on the line. I think there's a little extra motivation. But again, these things don't last forever.
Right.
Good conditions don't last forever. And eventually it's going to, you know, it's the reason this streak has gone on so long is because of two things. Basically, the conditions were ripe for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a superb pitcher, extremely able to exploit those conditions to the utmost.
Yeah.
So he's in a rare position where most pitchers don't even have that opportunity, and then he's taken it all the way to the bank. So, you know, is it luck? Oh, yeah.
Oh, in part, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
like you said last week, there's a lot of fortune that's going into this thing. But the other part is,
but there's big time luck, but how many pitchers could do it if they had the same luck? The answer is almost nobody.
Yeah. I
mean, Darvish, yeah, probably. Darvish, one of these big guys, Inao, maybe, you know, these big pitchers. Saito of the Giants.
Yeah, Nomo in his day, maybe.
Yeah, Nomo. Yeah. Those guys could have done it, but they didn't have they were not blessed with the opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, Masahiro Tanaka has both the ability and the opportunity, which is, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
And what I like to see, I don't think he throws any harder or any better in high pressure situations and high pressure counts or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just has this ability to take a deep breath and focus and make a good pitch. Now, it might get hit, but the guys behind him are fielding. Just like you said, they're hitting, they're scoring runs, they're fielding too, they're catching the ball behind him.
Well, that's the thing, is he makes his, you know, when he needs to get you out, first of all, if he needs to throw a strike, you know, if he's got three balls on it and he can't afford a walk, that ball's going to be in the strike zone or close enough to call.
Yeah, close enough that you have to swing to protect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he's not, you know, he's not trusting in fate. He's doing what they, you know, he does what they teach people to do or they tell people to do, but one of those things that's, you know, it's easier said than done, which is you know, do what you normally do. You make your best pitch. If the guy can hit it, more power to him. And that's what he does. He gives him, you know, something, you know, he's going to throw a strike when he needs to throw a strike. Mm. He's not going to give stuff away, but he doesn't beat himself.
Yeah. Now, the other thing we've seen is that their rotation doesn't have a lot of depth. And
yeah.
They could be in trouble in a playoff situation.
I like Kenny Ray. He's a nice guy, but boy, that looked like a disaster waiting to happen again tonight. His second game for the Eagles.
You know, they've got Makun, they've got Norimoto, and then they've got a problem. Because all the guys after that are pretty much the same guy. And I get the idea or the impression that in a playoff situation, I think Hoshino's going to say, okay, you're going to throw these two innings, and if depending on the situation, we'll send you out there for a third. And he's just, because they're all the same guy, it's just a matter of who hits what kinds of pitches better. I think he's just going to send a few guys out there and say, okay, they're going to do the Colorado thing where they send two pitchers to take over a game and see if they can get through 8 innings with those two guys, and then
a little bit WBC kind of stuff.
Hand it over to the bullpen, maybe even 6 innings. So 3-3, and then the last two.
Well, things are going
to
be
3 innings go to somebody else. I don't know. It's going to be interesting because if they don't win the league title, they're not going into Japan series because Makun can't pitch every game, and neither can Norimoto, and if they have to play that first round and exhaust those two guys, I don't see them coming back from 4-run deficits in the playoffs every night.
Could be tough. And the other thing is, well, Daryl Rasner was deactivated today, which is a really bad sign because he's been, with the exception of one,
the last one wasn't that bad. It just, you know, they called some boneheaded pitches in my opinion, but I mean.
Yeah. And things, you know, good, you know, as often happens, good pitch, bad result, bad pitch.
Bad result. Worst result.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's that so often the pitch that shouldn't be hit but is followed by the pitch that shouldn't be thrown.
Yeah.
So, anyway, he was deactivated today, and that's going to hurt because he has been so consistent this year, largely, he says, as a result of regular work. And without that closer in there, yeah, who's going to come out next? Kaneto or?
Yeah, Hasebe was throwing.
Hasebe? I guess he's going to be their guy for the time being.
Koyama was throwing. Koyama, I think, was he deactivated? I think he was, but he'll be back, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think they buried him somewhere. you just go back, go, you know, sit in the corner, and we'll call you when we need you.
Yeah, they're going to have to piece this thing together. But this race is by no means over, even though they have a 5.5 game lead going into Monday as we post this show. But, yeah, I've been saying for a while now, there's still a lot of baseball to play. The Marines are still alive. The Lions are still alive.
The Hawks are
starting to win games. Now, I wouldn't say they're becoming the team I predicted they would be, but they're in third place, and they're 5 games over .500, and they won a few games this weekend, and they're looking a little bit better than the Lions. But, you know, there's ups and downs. So nobody's out of it. I'm not counting, I mean, except for Oryx and maybe the Fighters, but even they played well and they've won a few games in a row. So I think there's a lot of baseball to go. This is the way we wanted it to be, just like in the Central League with the Tigers, who have made kind of a little bit of a rush back here with the Giants falling back. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. All right, let's talk about our buddy Ichiro Suzuki and his...
Oh, yeah, my buddy Ichiro.
Great milestone.
My buddy.
His great milestone. And let's talk about Ichiro, the milestone, and the future. Now, he gets to 4,000 hits right in the U.S. and MPB combined.
Right.
And the U.S. media made it sound like it came out of nowhere. I mean, they didn't really talk about it very much leading up. And then all of a sudden, hey, you know, he's got 4,000 hits coming. Let's talk about it and let's make a big deal.
Well, what they all learned was the same bad pronunciation of the word omedeto from the same person, because I heard it on 4 different channels calling it.
Don't mispronounce it. I was watching the Yankee broadcast. And
they were all the same. They were identical.
Poor Michael Kay. I mean, he took that word and stomped all over it until it was
recognizable. Whoever gave it to him wrote down the pronunciation wrong, because I heard it on 4 different broadcasts and it was identical in all of them.
Omedeto.
It's not like he was ordering an omelet with dates on it.
Well, let's get back to Ichiro now instead.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I wasn't all that impressed. I remember sitting back when he got the 3,000 hits, and we were in the office together, and we were kind of talking about the fact that he was being compared to Pete Rose, and we talked about the fact, well, I said, well, I don't really respect Ichiro. He doesn't really have a great swing, and 3,000 hits, blah, blah, blah. And then I didn't know what was going to happen, obviously, but in the next 1,000 hits. And you see how he, I mean, you remember that kid, that little bony kid who used to swing his leg and...
Sure, and pointed his bat at the pitcher.
Yeah, well, he still does that, right? But that leg swing that he had with the Oryx Blue Wave.
Sure.
And it's gone, you know, we don't even remember that part of his game. And it seemed like he was running before he even made contact with the ball. And he was so fast and he got all these hits. And then he went to the States and... he got rid of that leg swing, and they've got him still, and they've got him closed, you know, basically that batting stance, and they changed a little bit of his game. He's still got the little slappy slap-and-dash style, but he really has been amazing, and I did go there, and I did try to talk to him, and in the time that I was trying to interview him, I watched him prepare for games and watched, and, you know, one of my nicknames for him is Stretchito. Instead of Ichiro, because he stretches so much. And for you guys who don't live in Japan and don't see NHK broadcasts, they show in between the commercials when American affiliates go to commercial and they're showing commercials. We usually see Ichiro going back out to the outfield, and he stretches in the outfield constantly. Stretch, stretch, stretch. So that's I nicknamed him Stretchito. But, you know, where do we want to rank him? The experts / critics say, you know, he wouldn't have been as successful had he gone to the States at the age of 20 and blah, blah, blah. And I say, you know, the guy can hit.
Well, here's the thing. Number one is his what was his stretch in the majors, 2,791 hits?
Yeah. In 13 years, it was more
than... 13 years was more than anybody major leaguer ever had.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about a guy where... Well, to be fair, he's coming in his prime, but he also has to make he has to make a lot of adjustments.
Yeah.
And of course, on the other hand, people had to adjust to him because nobody was ready for, a dead ball hitter like Shoeless Joe Jackson come up, in 2001. So that's fair enough too. Again, the conditions were good for him. The conditions were easier when Ichiro was 27. The conditions for a hitter were better than when Pete Rose was 27. Now, Pete Rose, they were very similar offensive players.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Rose did not have Ichiro's speed, and he did not have Ichiro's defensive value. He was a mediocre second baseman, and then he became a mediocre third baseman, and then he was a mediocre outfielder, and then he was a mediocre first baseman.
Right.
And then he was a mediocre manager. But he didn't have that, but he was, in my opinion, he didn't have the athleticism or the hitting skill that Ichiro has.
Okay.
But I would put them up there in terms of quality. I think they're very similar.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, he didn't have the gun, and he didn't have the defense, and he didn't have a couple of other things.
Yeah,
Ichiro may have been they're probably about even.
Yeah.
I think they're about even. But as far as, okay, so that's one part of the argument. And the other part of the argument is the stuff shouldn't count. Okay, I'm all with the stuff not counting because we've got, Ichiro is not the leading hitter in Japan, and he's not the leading hitter in the majors. Now, Jason Koskrie had a very nice column the other day in the Japan Times. You should all read it. Saying, that's fine because what he did in both sides was quite amazing, but he's, his career was sawed in half.
Yeah.
He had, now first of all, a lot of the MLB broadcasts said Ichiro spent 7 years in Japan. That is incorrect. He spent 9 years in Japan.
Yeah, everybody's got it all. And I saw some places writing that he was with the Oryx Buffaloes, and I'm like, you cads, what are you doing?
Yeah, well.
And they call it the Japan Major Leagues, as if, they're trying to major MLB the NPB over here.
That's a very appropriate name, to be honest.
Well, it is, but it's incorrect.
In what sense is it incorrect?
It has nothing to do with the major leagues.
No, but the major leagues is basically a brand of a name that was already there before they made a proper noun out of it.
All right, we're certainly not going to debate this on this show.
No, all I'm saying is the Japan Major Leagues is the best explanation, because otherwise you have to refer to it as the Central and or Pacific Leagues.
That's true, but
as opposed to the Western League, you have to
make that what it is, Japan Pro Baseball.
But that's not, because that includes the Western and Eastern Leagues. So there. So those are the minor leagues in Japan. So where he did play, and he was a two-time batting champion in the Western League. So we're not counting those, because they were in the minor leagues and not in the Japan Major Leagues. I'm okay with that. As long as all you got to do is take the capital letters off them, and that's the principal distinction. Well, the major leagues aren't MLB because that's their brand, but they're major leagues because they're not minor leagues. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, I'm good with that. As to whether he could have had as many hits in America as he had in Japan, my answer is probably yes.
Yeah, they had more games.
Exactly. You saw that happen. As soon as he jumped from 130-game schedule to 162-game schedule, he was getting 220 hits like clockwork.
Yeah,
250. So could he have gotten, okay, if he had playing in 162 games in Japan, sure, he would have been having 300 hit seasons.
It's possible.
But the point is, he would have probably had more hits if he had started playing in the majors as a 20-year-old. He would have eaten, you know, Pete Rose would be choking on his dust.
Yeah. Well, I did see some comments by Pete Rose who had the temerity to say that... if we're going to add Ichiro's hits from Japan, then we should add his hits when he was in the minor leagues, when Pete Rose played in the minor leagues, his 200 or something hits that he had then. So that only makes sense. If Ichiro didn't have more hits than anyone ever, as we just discussed over that 13-year period, that makes sense, because then when he came to the States, then he would have had an adjustment period where he failed and he had to make all kinds of adjustments. And no, we didn't see that. The guy started hitting as soon as they got off the plane and then until they told him the season was over.
Yeah.
You know, he hit just about everybody.
But again, I think Jason's point is perfectly accurate. Hey, Pete Rose has the major league record. Pete Rose is always going to have the major league record
until
somebody breaks it. Ichiro can't possibly break that record. He's just not going to, you know, unless he plays until he's 55. Unless he does, you know, Julio Franco on us or something.
Yeah.
But that ain't going to happen. So you know what? My point is, who cares? He may not have Pete Rose's record, but what he has done is every bit as impressive as what Pete Rose did.
Right, and his manager, Joe Girardi, said, "I didn't have 4,000 hits my whole career going back to T-ball," which was a great compliment, I thought, and pretty funny.
Did they really play T-ball when Joe Girardi was a kid? Wow. He's not as old as he looks, then.
Yeah, he's not much older than I am, so watch your mouth there, Sonny.
Thanks for calling me Sonny, dude.
All right, good. So, I love what he did. I really respect what he has done. The 4,000 hits are great, but Sports Hochi had a big headline the next day. It said 50 years old, 5,000 hits.
No.
And I thought, nah, but then I read a little bit of the story. I didn't have time to read too much. Of course, I was chained to the desk at work, but you know, he said something to the effect of, well, I want to play as long as I can, and if I'm still able to play, I could see that happening. And I'm like, dude, no. You're not going to be out there at 50 doing what you're doing now.
Yeah,
because
that's the problem.
You're not going to be as worth anything to a team. I mean, you know, you're not throwing as well as you used to. You're not fielding as well as you used to. You're not getting on bases.
Well, I think he's catching the ball as well as ever. He's just not getting to the ball as quickly. He can't cover as much ground. He doesn't have the arm strength he used to have. He's not as fast off the ball. He's not as fast. His bat speed is not what it was. So yeah, it's hard to see that. It is easy to see him playing until he's until he's 44 or 45.
I would say 45, I think, if the body allows him to do that. He's never really suffered a major injury, but I think
other than the broken bone when he was hit by a pitch.
Yeah, but I mean,
right.
A broken bone hit by pitch opposed to a guy like Hideki Matsui who broke his wrist, chasing a ball, something. And he's never had anything like that. So I could see him playing for another 4 or 5 years and being productive.
I don't think he could break a bone in the field. I think he's Gumby.
But, you know, I don't think he's going to come back and play in Japan. And I think that would really get him past.
It would be beneath him to come back.
I don't think he would do that. And I think that's going to cut his career short. I think he's going to have issues like Matsui did at the end of his career, where people do want him because he's a good draw, but they don't want him so much because of what he's doing on the field. But he's adequate. So I see that happening to him. I see the ability that, you know, he can't get the infield hits he had been getting in the past. He doesn't drive in a lot of runs. He's not really getting on base. He's going to have to change his approach to make it last. But I think he can. And I think when it's all said and done, even though Mr. Rose doesn't like what he's done, I think he'll end up with more professional hits. It's on the top flight
leagues. Yeah. Sure. And he's going to, I think there's no doubt he's going to be a Hall of Famer because of not because of his ability to win, but because of his impact as a player and the fact that he's so famous and he's such an amazing individual talent. He's such an unusual player. He's so unique in this day and age that I think it would be a major shock if people didn't say, because everybody knows Ichiro, everybody knows, has this image of him.
Yep, yeah.
So,
yeah,
anyway.
So, yeah, one quick note before we move on to the notes section is that I did write about that on the blog. I said, you know, essentially he did saw his career in half. If he could have gone to the States earlier,
he would have been a bigger, I know he couldn't.
He would have been a bigger thing over there. If he had just given up on the States and stayed here, he'd have been a bigger thing over here. But because he cut his career and split him like that, he is always going to be thought about as a second tier player. I guess not second tier, but, you know, not.
He's not going to be the top of the heap in either side of the Pacific.
Exactly. All right. One quick note. One of my favorite players in MPV, Shinya Miyamoto of the Yakult Swallows, is set to announce his retirement at the end of the season. And I'm really sorry to see him go as a player, but I think he's going to be a really good coach and I hope manager pretty soon.
Yeah, he's a very rare talent. I've said it before. I'll say it. In fact, I'm going to say it again right now. He belongs to a very elite group. Those players who had 2,000 hits after they played in college. And university and the corporate leagues. And unlike Hiromitsu Ochiai, he didn't quit college in the middle. He did the whole 9 yards. Him and his teammate Atsuya Furuta was the other guy. So it's a, you know, 10 gold gloves. He won a gold glove last year, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah. Pretty amazing guy.
So, yeah, very amazing. Great, a smart player. He's a testimony to how good a player of not outstanding physical talents can be when you're diligent and prepared and have extremely good judgment and are an extremely quick thinker.
Yep.
Otherwise, take those 10 gold gloves and give them to somebody who can run faster.
Yep, exactly. All right, well, good luck to him. Let's go to fielding questions. Okay, the first one is from Steve in London. He says, "Hi, I have a question about Japanese television commentators. Do you think they provide a good level of analysis and insight, and how do they compare to their MLB equivalents? Keep up the great work." All right.
I'll let you answer that one because you're the media man, Don Gibson.
Well, first of all, Steve, thanks so much for the encouraging words. Makes us want to work harder. It depends. For me, when I'm watching on TV, and of course, when you're watching on TV, everything is so much different, and the radio announcers are so much better because they have to be. They have to explain what's going on and who's doing what because you don't have the pictures to see. So that goes for every kind of announcer worldwide, but if you're watching MLB announcers, and if I'm watching an MLB game, I don't watch it in Japanese simply because I know that the announcers who work with the teams know a lot more about the players than the Japanese announcers do. Mm-hmm. And some of the Japanese broadcasters tend to be a little bit dramatic. Sometimes on a foul ball, they'll raise their voices and try to get people looking at the screen or something. If perhaps maybe they're not. This is on TV, of course. On the radio, it happens that way too. They raise their voices sometimes unnecessarily because balls are obviously foul. But I would say that they're really, really good. And some of my favorite guys, my favorite announcer who does game announcers is Toshiharu Shimamura. And I'm sure, Jim, if you heard his voice, you would recognize him. But we, you know, these announcers in Japan are not famous. They don't get, you know, we don't have any Howard Cosells or Jim Lampleys or people who this person does this team or they're affiliated with this team or linked with this team all the time. We don't have that, but Mr. Shimamura is my favorite announcer, and my favorite analyst is Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, not just because he was a dragon, but because of his insight, and he really simplifies what's going on in a pitcher's mind and a batter's mind at the same time, and it's not very confusing the way he explains it, because some of the guys, they talk so detailed. Of course, it's in Japanese, which is not my native language. I don't catch every single word. Maybe I've got 90% of it. Sometimes I don't know what they're saying. But compared to the major league counterparts, sometimes they get too detailed, and you get so flooded with information, and you can't concentrate on the game, essentially. And then the TV guys, I just like the U.S. announcers much better. I think they have a flair for the game. They seem to be very well prepared. All the analysts, there isn't an analyst I really hate out there in the States, especially when it gets to the playoffs, when you've got Tim McCarver and guys like that who, you know, they're not afraid to give their opinions as well as tell you what's going on in the hitter's minds, the batter's minds, and the manager's minds. They're really better about telling you what a manager is thinking. But again, it just depends. Some of the other color guys I like are Katsuya Nomura. Really good. Shingo Takatsu.
Katsuya Nomura never, he never talks about what the manager or players should be doing, does he? Never gives an opinion.
All the time, maybe.
He tells what everybody should be doing.
Yeah.
What's that guy doing? He doesn't know what he's doing. Get him off the field.
Well, I remember him for the, I think it was 2005,
Tomoya Satozaki.
Chiba Lotte Marines are in Fukuoka, and they're trying to come back from a deficit in the series, and I think it was the final game, right?
Was the final game, and I believe it was.
And
the
Saburo Omura was he thought he should bunt, and Saburo doesn't.
Satozaki
didn't bunt.
Right.
No, Satozaki got the hit.
Right. He got the double.
No, but before that, it was Saburo who didn't bunt. And Nomura was saying, I can't believe they didn't bunt here, and they should have bunted. I don't know what Bobby Valentine is doing. And then Satozaki comes up and rips a double off the wall, and they end up winning the game. So, but I still like Katsuya. I'd rather have that than not. So,
okay. I don't have too many opinions. I think the style is different. I think in Japan, they're more about telling you. The analyst is more about telling you what the next pitch is going to be and should be. And they're so often right. I mean, there's almost a style guide to Japanese baseball that if you know the pitcher
and you know the catcher
and you know the catcher and you're familiar with what happens in certain game situations in Japan, you're going to be right about 80% of the time. It's like counting cards.
Yep.
And Yasushi Tao, who is a former player and manager.
Eagles manager.
Yeah, former Eagles manager.
Their first manager.
The first Eagles manager all of 1 year. And I asked him, how do you like being an analyst? He says, it's fun. You know, I get to think along. It's nice. I get to think along with the managers and the players. And I says, you're right? Says, yeah, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
All right. Next question comes from Brian in California, and he says, you were talking about expanded replay, and Jim mentioned that MPB games are already too long. My question, why are MPB games so long? He says, just for the Lions alone, I count 6 9-inning games that have gone over 4 hours, including one last week that went 4 hours and 37 minutes. For those of us who don't have access to broadcasts, what is it that makes the pace so slow?
That's a good question. And I think this is something that needs to be studied, because I don't have a good answer. I mean, I could tell you that it's this and that. There are so many small things that are different here. Mm-hmm. One of them is that managers are allowed to argue balls and strikes.
Mm.
But they don't usually.
Yeah, I don't. That I haven't seen that slow game.
That's probably. That might be a minute per game on average. So it's not that. I think the pitchers are slow coming to the plate.
Yep.
I think a few things. I think the pitching changes are faster than they used to be because they put a clock on them.
Mm-hmm.
But they used to be long, but the games are longer now than before they started putting a clock on the pitchers changing. So the question is, why do they take so long? Okay, here's one thing. Again, this is something that doesn't happen a lot, but it will add to the average the game time for everything. When a player is hurt in Japan, they will, with few exceptions, give him a chance to get better.
Mm-hmm.
They can practically take him to the hospital and get a few stitches and bring him back. Yes. I've seen.
And they make the announcement, please wait while the player gets treatment.
That's right. In the major leagues, I've seen that. You usually get about a minute.
Yeah. He's still rolling around. Roll him off the field and let's go.
I give credit to Hideki Kuriyama of the Fighters. If his player is hurt, he doesn't waste time. The guy needs to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
In a big game, I'm going to say it was 1996, Hiromitsu Ochiai of the Giants stepped on his glove at first base in the final game of the season and got 20 minutes of treatment before the game resumed. The fact that the bullpens are deeper because they have a 28-man roster means they use more pitchers per game. I think that's probably the biggest thing of all. That's probably the biggest thing.
All right. Well, I have an opinion based on a little bit of science, if you want to call it that. I record a lot of games and I watch games, and I have a 30-second skip button on my VCR. It's an HDR. I'm talking 90s. I'm sorry. That was 90s talks. It was a flashback.
Get out of the 90s, John Gibson.
All right. So when I'm watching major league games, if I hit that 30-second skip button, I'm after a pitch, let's just say a guy throws a pitch and I hit the button, I'm going to miss the next pitch. But in Japan, I can hit the 30-second button and it's basically maybe 45 seconds sometimes between pitches.
Yeah.
Then that's one thing. And then normally there's so many slap hitters in Japan that they foul a lot of pitches off. Now normally a foul ball, I hit that 30-second jump, and in the major leagues, they're back to playing. But in Japan, it's almost a minute sometimes. So because there are so many foul balls, because there are so many slap hitters, because there are so many 3-2 counts, in Japan, the pitchers never mind walking a guy, and 3-2 counts are like a matter of course sometimes in Japan. And when you get to 2-3, they foul a bunch of other pitches off too.
Yeah,
and I think that happens a lot. And I think that's basically where we're getting slowed down. I think the things that you mentioned, Jim, are valid.
Frank Bullock of the former Seattle Mariner and of the Lotte Marines used to say, we could speed up every Japanese game by starting every count 3-2 because that's what the pitchers and batter and umpire are all conspiring to do in the first place.
And I agree.
Yeah, Frank's a great guy. Boy, he could grump about anything with the best of them, but I'll tell you, he is a sharp guy.
Yeah.
He was so sharp and so astute and had some of the absolute best comments about Japanese baseball I ever heard.
All right. Well,
miss you, Frank.
Yeah, we'll have to get him on the show in the off season.
That could be dynamite.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Brian and Steve, for your questions. Awesome questions, and hopefully we got them answered between the two of us. We're looking forward to MP3 questions. I saw one that's probably going to be coming soon this week I saw it on the homepage, so hopefully it gets here. And we can answer the uniform question because we had a real abomination occur this this weekend in Hiroshima that we never want to see again, okay? I was saying, I think I said we have to get Law and Order Fashion Division out there.
Wow. John be singing the blues next week, baby.
All right, well, send your questions to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we will address them on the show. And you can also leave comments on the Facebook page. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao, everyone. Talk to you later.
Enjoy your baseball.